Now, a few years ago, I got the notification in the mail from the Department of Motor Vehicles that I needed to come down and take my test to renew my license. And I'm one of the people that always has to go and actually take a test, partly because of some medical things, but mostly because I got a lot of tickets. And I get the test, and the previous few times I had taken the test, I had passed, but I hadn't done really well. You know, and on those DMV tests, they ask you questions that you don't normally encounter, right? Where you have the question of, like, how far before the intersection do you start braking? 300 feet, 350 feet, or 400 feet? And I'm thinking, when I see the intersection, I brake. I don't know how many feet that is. I don't get out and pace it off. Or they show you a sign that you've never seen before and ask you what that sign indicates. And then you're left to guess. So I had passed, but I hadn't passed by a lot. And I thought, I am probably a below average driver, but I'm an above average test taker. So I'm going to do well this time when I got the thing. So I did what most of us stopped doing after we're 16. I went and got the booklet, and I thought, I'm going to study, and I'm going to show the DMV people that I'm an above average driving test taker. So I got the thing, and I studied, and I looked at it, and I figured all this stuff out, and I went over it, and I took sample tests, and I would be, you know, like, sitting in my office, I'd pull out the thing and study a little bit, and I was going to nail the test and show them, because I don't want to be below average, right? I mean, who wants to be below average in anything, and particularly, you know, for me, on a test? So I go to the DMV the day of the test, I walk in, and I get that, you know, I'd made an appointment, so I'm already above average because I walk in front of all the people standing in line. And I get my test, and I go over, and I was kind of, I'd been afraid that I would get it, and I would have that experience that you sometimes have where suddenly it's like you studied for the wrong test. But I looked, and it was all the right questions, and I knew the answers to them, and I'm checking off, and I'm doing well, and I'm feeling good about myself, and, you know, there's a couple that I didn't know about, but I get done, and I go up. And, you know, the woman says, okay, you know, why don't you give me your test? And she gives it. And I look, and she's going down, and she's not marking any wrong. So I'm thinking, oh, this is pretty good. And here's really what I'm thinking on the inside. She's going to be talking to her coworkers for days about how good I was at taking the test. So she goes through the thing, and I missed, like, one. And she said, you only missed one. That's pretty good. And I'm like, okay, cool. You know, I'm above average. So she gives me back. So we go through the process. You go over and you take your picture. And I make sure to hold my head up because I had one of those unfortunate pictures where my head was down and I looked terrible for 4 years on my driver's license. And that's back when you wrote checks and people had to look at your driver's license. And so I hold my head up. I go through the whole thing and I'm feeling good about it. I'm driving home and I can't wait to call my wife and say, guess who only got one wrong on the driver's test? I'm above average on taking tests. And I get home and I'm feeling good and I feel good. And I walk in and I get ready to brush my teeth and I look and I had my t-shirt on backwards. That it was up, you know, it was and there was the big logo in the front that was supposed to be in the back and then the little logo on one side. So I had gone through the entire test. Now, I did well on the test, but I'm sure when I left, they're saying, he's below average in his ability to put on shirts. So for 4 years, I had a driver's license picture where the collar was like up over my Adam's apple that I hadn't noticed because I was so excited about the test. We don't want to be below average, though, right? Who wants to be below average? Let me tell you an area that if you're an American, the better you do, the more below average you are, and that's on how much you give. You know, the average American statistically gives 3.1% of their income to charity, all kinds of charities. Now, okay, so there's going to be some statistics here, but I think you can follow this. Okay, 3.1%. The average person, the average family that makes under $25,000 gives 4.2% of their income, significantly more than the average American. The average American who makes over $100,000 gives under 3%, less than average. The more you make, the lower percentage you give of your income statistically in America. So the better we do financially, the less we give, the less generous we are. Today is the third week on a series we're doing called How to Be Rich, and I just kind of want to review how we got here, what we've talked about the two previous weeks. Pastor John and Pastor Jerry were here, spoke the last 2 weeks. Bob Rickey is going to be here next week. He has been here before. He is he's a financial planner, an expert on this, and very entertaining. So I want to encourage you to be back for that. But here's where we've been so far. Remember, the first week we talked about the fact that you're rich. You remember that? You are rich. Here's another statistic for you. If your household income is $25,000, which in America is lower income, if it's $25,000 for your house, that's everyone in your house combined, all your annual income, $25,000, you're in the top 10% in the world. Now, if your household income is $50,000, that means if there's more than one adult in the house working, you combine your income, if it's $50,000 or more, you're in the top 1%. Okay? Average Solano County household, almost $70,000 is the average income. Now, you're going to spend the rest of the hour contemplating whether you're above or below average for our county, but I don't spend time doing that. Just want to point out, we talked about you're rich. Here's the get-rich-quick scheme that I'm thinking about doing a late-night infomercial on. Here's the way to get rich quick. Live in the United States during the 21st century, and you're rich. I think I can make money off that. Get rich quick. So you're rich, and that's the good news. The bad news that Jerry talked about last week is that you're rich. The good news is you're rich, but the bad news is you're rich because the Bible tells us that if you're rich, it's tougher for you. Jesus said it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter heaven. And the reason was that when we're rich, when we have our needs met, we tend to not rely on God, but we can kind of meet our own needs. When Jesus taught his disciples and said, pray, give us this day our daily bread, we don't really have to do that. Because we might say, give us next month, help us meet next month's payments, but we don't have to pray about our daily needs necessarily, because we have that illusion that we can take care of them. So the bad news is you're rich, and also, you know, interestingly, Jesus in that same passage where he said it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter heaven, followed that up by saying, with God, everything's possible. So he wasn't saying it's impossible. He's just saying it's tough because you tend to rely on yourself if you're wealthy. And then he also said there is a different to the person who much is given, much is expected. In Luke chapter 12, he talks about that. So that there's a different standard if you're wealthy. So the idea really how to be rich, we're talking about understanding we're rich. You're rich. Understand you're rich, but don't trust in that riches. And today we're going to go with the next thing is that really the question that I want to deal with today is why did God make us rich? And again, you know, we look around and we don't feel rich. I would guess that most of us in the room don't feel rich. You look at your neighbors and you feel either the same or maybe a little bit less, or maybe if you're fortunate a little bit ahead, but we don't feel rich. But the fact is that we are. In the history of the world, we are the wealthy. And so what are we supposed to do about it? Why did God make us rich? Did God make us rich so we could buy more and get more, consume more? Because that's really, if you look at our culture, that's what it looks like. That must be why we do it. But here's why God made you rich. God made you rich so that you could give more. God made you rich so you could create a margin so that you could give more to other people. I want to look at a passage. We're going to go back into this a few. If you have your Bibles, open it to this. It's going to appear on the screen, but we're going to look at some stuff around it. It's in 2 Corinthians chapter 9. Corinth was a town that was a port town, a real town, real people. Paul, who went and started churches and told people about Jesus, started a church there. This are people that were dealing with real things, and they were a really kind of a diverse, since it was a port city, people from all over the world came there with all kinds of backgrounds. So he wrote to them, and in this passage he talks about it. This comes at the end of a passage where he talks about generosity and how we need to give and how we need to take care of each other. And 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 11 would be a great kind of target for us today for what we're talking about. He said, you will be made rich in every way so that, why did I get made rich? You'll be made rich in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion, and through us your generosity, because he's saying through us because he was going to be distributing the money, through us your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. What if people saw us and thanked God for our generosity? What if people saw you and said, I'm so grateful because that person is generous and makes a difference in his or her community and in the world because they're generous with what they have. I thank God for that person. That's really the target. That's what Paul said. You'll be blessed in every way so that you can be generous, and through your generosity, people will thank God for you. So God wants you to give more. Here's the blank, which you probably have already filled out. There you go. Because I have more, I will give more. That's why you're rich. And here's a statement. We've talked about this the last few weeks, kind of a statement about how to be rich that we've built on each week, and you may not even have realized we were doing this, but we are, so now you know the secret. God has blessed me with more than I need. I'm rich. But I won't trust in my riches, but in him who richly provides. Okay, that's what we talked about the first 2 weeks. God has blessed me with more than I need. I'm rich. But I won't trust in my riches, but in him who richly provides. And then today we add, because I have more, I will give more. Because I have more, I'm going to give more. And if you're like me, the question then is like, how can I give more? How can I give more? I don't have any more to give. And I'm not, a couple things I want to make clear. One is, I'm talking today to followers of Jesus. If you're a committed follower of Jesus, that's who I'm talking to. If you're checking things out, God cares about you, not about your money. And we're going to see today how our money indicates kind of where we are. But this is not about, let's get money for New Life or for the gospel or for anything. But secondly, what I'm talking about today is in the Bible. So if you have a gripe about it, put it on your care card and complain to God. Okay, there you go. That's how I dismiss everything. That's actually what I say to my kids. Well, if you have a problem with it, complain to God. So the question is, how can I give more? Because the reality is we think that our stack of money provides security for us. So we don't want to touch that. And I was thinking about this because we've been talking about how people around the world see us. Remember when we've talked about that? And they look at us and say, not only you have a house with indoor plumbing, but you have a house that you park your car in. Or maybe you pile all your junk in there and you park your car in a driveway because you have so much stuff. You know, and you go to restaurants and you pay people to prepare food for you and you eat 3 meals a day. And we've talked all about that. But I was thinking this week about how would, and this probably goes for almost everybody here, how would your grandparents look at your lifestyle? And this is not to say on your money handling, but I was thinking my grandparents were born early in the 20th century. My dad's parents had 8 kids and started having kids the year the Depression started. So they had 8 kids during that time and lived in the middle of the 20th century, by the way, 1950, the average house size, the size of the house in America was 600 to 800 square feet. That's the average household size. One bathroom is, you know, bigger family sizes. And I think of my, you know, the other day I was frustrated because, and this is serious, because my DVR for my satellite TV network or thing that has, you know, 200 channels, wasn't working right, so on my 2 TVs, I couldn't watch shows that I had recorded previously, and I wanted to watch on my own time. And it was like, dang, my DVR is done. What is wrong with it? I'm, like, getting all stressed out. And then my cell phone turned off, and I couldn't figure out how to turn it back on. And I'm thinking, my stress level was going up, and I was thinking, my DVR and my cell phone, 2 things that didn't exist during my grandparents' lives. What is wrong? And I was getting my stress levels going up, and I'm thinking, my sons aren't keeping clean their bathroom that is theirs, because we have 2 bathrooms, and there's only 4 of us that live in the house. What is wrong with them? And my walk-in closet isn't as warm as the rest of the house. And I'm thinking, what would my grandfather think of that, having raised 8 kids in a small house with 1 bathroom, kind of struggling? And to me, that's, you know, that's partly technology, but that's also kind of how to be rich. I had to admit it, really, really, my grandfather's eyes, he would say both I was rich and I was living sometime in the far distant future with Buck Rogers because I could talk on a cell phone. But how to be, we tend to think that our stuff gives us security. So we think, how can I give more? God made me rich so I can give more, but how am I supposed to give more? And I just want to give you one phrase that really is the whole thing and then kind of talk about how to apply it. Here's how you can give more. I'm rich. God made me rich. I'm not going to trust in my riches, but I'm going to, because I have more, I can give more. Here's how you can give more. I must become an intentional giver. That's the blank, intentional giver. We're intentional buyers, right? We scheme with money all the time. We figure out ways to do things. If I only work one extra overtime shift a week, we'll be able to afford that boat. Or I can put away for my retirement more for this. Or we scheme all the time how to get things, right? Has everybody here at some point come up with a plan on how you can afford to get something that you wanted to get? And there's nothing wrong with that. But to become an intentional giver, I'm going to need to scheme on how I can give more. My former backyard neighbor, I remember, they had the same size house as us, so a three-bedroom house, a couple. They had a kid, so they needed to move into a bigger house. Now, I don't know if they, you know, why you'd need four bedrooms when there's three people living in the house, but they needed to move to a bigger house. So his idea was, if my wife and I keep working one overtime shift a week, we'll be able to afford the mortgage payment on this new house that we're moving to. Okay, see, he was scheming on how to do it. Now, unfortunately, he was a state worker, so I think that probably didn't work out very well. But we scheme to do those all the time. If I can get that, we can't really afford that new car, but, you know, it gets better mileage, so we'll be spending less money on gas, and we'll get less fast food, so I can afford. We come up with ways to scheme to do it. And if I'm going to become an intentional giver, I need to scheme ways. How can I give more? I want to be a good giver. How can I give more? But I need to think about it and scheme how to do it. Jesus said, "It's more blessed to give than to receive." Right? Everybody heard that before? And we all go, "That's a really nice thing." The problem is we don't really believe that. We don't really live that. We kind of believe it at Christmas time. It's more fun to give gifts to kids than to get them from kids. Maybe because kids give cruddy gifts. But but we don't really believe that the rest of the year. We don't go, "That's a good idea. I'm gonna give." And let's look at 2 Corinthians. This is still in chapter 9, which we read earlier. This is an earlier verse. This is just a few verses before the one that we read earlier. Paul said, "Each man or woman should give what he has decided in his heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver." God loves a cheerful giver, but give what you've decided in your heart to give. Scheme about what you're going to give. Don't just come and show up and go, I don't know. Because when we scheme and we plan out ways to give as well as when we plan out ways to get, it's more rewarding when we do it. Have you ever had to save to get something and kind of plan? And it's kind of exciting when you can finally do that. The same thing if you say, "I want to be able to give away. I want to give more." When you scheme and do it, Paul said, give what you've decided in your heart to give and give cheerfully. So really, there's two ways to do that. How am I going to, the overall point today, be an intentional giver. If you're a follower of Jesus, that's who this is for. If you're a follower of Jesus, you're rich. God made you rich so that you could create a margin so that you can give more. How am I going to do that? I'm going to be an intentional giver, and here's two ways that you can do it. One is I'll return to God what belongs to God. I'll return to God what belongs to God. Now imagine this scenario, and for many of you, this may be a real-life scenario. If you've been around kids very much, it probably is, where you take a kid, a young kid, and you say, at some point say, "Let's go get food." And you go to the fast food restaurant, and you get, they want a kid's meal, and they get that. And you being an adult, even though you're in a fast food restaurant, say, "I'm going to eat healthy. I'm just going to have the 1,000, you know, grams of fat burger that they have, but I'm not going to have fries, and I'm not going to have a milkshake. I'm going to have a diet soda to go with this horribly unhealthy burger, so-called burger." Okay, so they do it, they get it, you get your food, you start eating, and all of a sudden the kid dumps their fries out and they're kind of picking at it, and the fries suddenly look kind of good, right? So you say, "I'm going to have a couple of your fries." And the kid says, "No, they're mine." Right? What goes through your head at that point? Who paid for them? Who is your fries supplier? Those are my fries, really. I'm just letting you eat them, right? I mean, that's kind of what it feels like. That's what we do with our money, that God says, I want, and we're going to talk about that, and I want you to give back. And we say, they're mine. It's mine. Get away. It's mine. And God, I have to think, is thinking, who gave you that? Who made that possible? Our checkbook, our online spending, how we spend our money tells a lot about really what we value and who we think owns it. A couple of passages, you can see them up here. Leviticus 27:30. This is the biblical teaching on the tithe. And tithe is a word that means tenth. One-tenth. A tithe of everything from the Lord, whether grain from the soil, this is during a time when people grew plants, this is Leviticus 27:30, or fruit from the tree belongs to the Lord. It is, what's the word? What is it to the Lord? It's holy to the Lord. The tithe is holy to the Lord. And then in Malachi 3, which is the very last book of the Old Testament, if you jump ahead and Malachi 3, 10, go back to 3:8, where the people, this is God speaking through a prophet to people who were kind of comfortable but couldn't understand why blessings were being withheld from them. And this is a conversation between God and the people. Will a man rob God? Yet you rob me. But you ask, how do we rob you? And this is God's answer. In tithes and offerings, you are under a curse, the whole nation of you, because you are robbing me. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse so there may be food in my house. Where God says, bring, there's blessings that are being withheld from you. Bring the whole tithe, the whole tenth, the first tenth of what you make, into my storehouse, into the local church, so that you may have blessings. We're supposed to be giving God, if you're following Jesus, the biblical command is that we give the first tenth to God. Now, it's hard to do, and here's why, and the curious thing is it's hard to do. If I gave you $10 and said, tithe on that, do you think you could do that? Most of us would go, yeah, it's a buck. You can't get anything with a buck. You can't even get a gallon of gas with a dollar. I'll give back a dollar. But then it starts to change when it gets to be more money, right? Here's $1,000, you know, you think of this, okay, I earned $1,000 this week, which may be an average, that's, if you earn $1,000 a week, that's a little over $50,000 a year. $1,000 a week, your tithe on that, $100, right? Now you're starting to talk some money. You could go to the grocery store with $100. You could go out to dinner twice or three times, or depending on where you go. You can, that's real money, so it gets a little tougher. Now imagine suddenly you're making $200,000 a year. How much is your tithe on that? $20,000. You could buy a car with that, right? That's real. That's hard to give. And as it goes up, we go, sure, it's easy to tithe when you're poor because you're not giving anything. But as you give, think if you were Alex Rodriguez. He makes over $25 million a year. And we go, oh, he makes so much money. His tithe would be $2.5 million. And he's thinking, you know, I could do something with $2.5 million. I could get another swimming pool. So it's hard for us to tithe because as income goes up, it gets harder to do because it starts to feel like, boy, I'm really giving money. And so the question, I just want to touch on this briefly in this. And again, this is a biblical instruction. And this is not just pulling out, this is through the Bible. But the reason that we tithe is not because God needs the money. Now, ministry can be done as believers tithe, but that's not the reason we tithe. I want to give you two good reasons that benefit you for why to give God that first tenth. And the one is, tithing teaches me to put God first. Here's the benefit you get. Tithing teaches me to put God first. You see, Deuteronomy 14:23 in the Living Bible says, the purpose of tithing is to teach you to always put God first in your lives. And I want to give you an illustration. Okay. This represents your money, okay? And I picked bread because I'm cool and we call money bread. Okay? Consider this is your income, right? This is how much money I make in a week or a month or whatever. Let's use a month. Okay, this is how much money I make in a month. This is the way that we normally distribute our income, all right? I got my check. Well, I got my mortgage payment or my rent payment or whatever, and it's quite a bit. So I got to pay that, right? There it goes. Okay, that's off. Now I got that car payment. So let me pay that. That's a decent chunk here. Okay, so I don't have that much left. I got that credit card payment I got to pay. I'll pay the minimum, and I'll be paid off in 100 years, okay? I got all my utilities. I got to pay that because I can't get them turned off, okay? I got groceries I got to get, okay? So there's that. It's going down pretty soon. My kids are playing youth soccer, and they got school pictures and whatever, so I got to do that. We got to go out to dinner a few times. I got my discretionary income. I missed that's when you miss your payment. Some other bills that I got to pay that I forgot about that just came up, and I got to do that. I got a copay. Now I got that, and I get to church, and what do I have? Right? I got crumbs to give to God. That's what I got. That's the way, and the reality is, believers or non-believers, that's the way that most of us do it. Right? That's how we pay. We get it. I gotta pay this. I gotta pay that. I gotta pay that. I gotta pay that. Oh, I want to give, but this is all I got left. So now, here, if we're saying, I'm going to give the first 10%, we take off 10%, and it feels that hard sometimes. Okay, so you go, okay, I'm giving that. Now, I got to make my mortgage payment. I got to pay my credit cards. I got to pay for my car. I got to pay, but what are you having to do with the rest of it? You're building the rest of it around the idea that God gets first priority in my life, and I have to rearrange the rest of my life so that my awareness of God, all these decisions I'm making in my life, I'm thinking, how does that affect my relationship with God? It's not a financial thing, it's a spiritual thing. When I tithe, when I say I'm going to give the first 10% to God, it teaches me to put God first and build the rest of my life, my bills, my groceries, my credit card payments, what I spend my money on, my discretionary income, I build it around God. Tithing teaches you to put God first. You benefit from that. That's not about what happens to your money. That's about how you benefit. So that's the first way that tithing helps you. The second is tithing increases my faith in God. It takes faith to give first. It takes faith to give money before, when you don't know what's going to go with it. And let me just tell you and as many people as there are could have different stories on this, but when Carrie and I got married, which was a while ago, but the economy wasn't that different, I was making $13,000 a year, and it was not very much then either. And she was going to school, so actually, she was a drain on our resources. But we decided early, we were following Jesus, and we said, we're going to give, we're going to tithe. And we gave when we were making that much, and then the first few years of our marriage, it didn't change very much. It went up a little bit, it didn't change much, and our expenses went up. But we gave, and I don't have any of those stories. You know, sometimes if you've been around church for a while, you get those stories where somebody says, yeah, I wrote a check for $500. The next day, a check came in the mail for $500 from somebody I didn't know was coming, which is great, but I don't have those stories. Here's what I know, though. God provided for us. I don't know how. And I, you know, a lot of times it was just kind of little things happening or getting to the end of the month and going, you know what, we made it again. Let's write that. We're going to pay our tithe and we're going to honor God with the first tenth of what we make. And God met our needs. We moved here. Our income didn't go up much. God met our needs and we continued to give. Our income went up a little bit. Then we adopted Chad and Derek. And our legal bills were, between those two, was $40,000. It was $700 a month because we had to borrow it on high interest rates. It was $700 a month we were paying. And for a while, Carrie wasn't working. I don't know how God helped us make it, but my faith got built because God continued to help us through those times. And again, it wasn't these miraculous, necessarily obvious, miraculous flashpoint moments. It was, you know, I'd get to the end of the year and go, you know what? We gave, and God, we didn't, our lifestyle didn't dramatically increase, but God built our faith through that. And then we got to the middle years of our careers, and our income actually did go up, and we continued to give, and we actually found ways to give more, and our faith was built. And then this last year, in November, I lost my job. And suddenly our income dropped. It went down quite a bit. And here's the truth. It was scary, and it made us nervous. But years of giving and realizing God will take care of us, and it might be different than we envisioned, but God will take care of us. We're going to continue to give. And our faith had been built because we gave first. I got another job for a pretty significant pay decrease. But the faith that had been built, the benefit to us was that our faith had been built because we tithing. And you know, that same story, I hear that story in my small group from people who start giving later in life and maybe don't always know how it works, but God builds our faith when we take faith risks. And for some of us, it's a faith risk to say, I'm going to start giving. I'm going to start tithing. That's a faith risk, and that's how God builds our faith. I want to challenge you in your program. You got this thing, this 4-month tithe challenge. Can you pull it out and look at it? Because here's all I want to do. This passage in Malachi 3, 8 through 10, this is what God says in Malachi 10. Check this out, because this does not happen anywhere else in the Bible. God says, bring the whole tithe into the storehouse that there may be food in my house. And he says, test me in this, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that you'll have enough room for it. And then he goes on and says, I'll prevent the pests from devouring your crops, and the vines in your fields will not cast their fruit, says the Lord Almighty. The nations will call you blessed, for you will be a delightful land, says the Lord Almighty. Only place in the Bible where God says, test me in this. So here's what we want to do, because we believe this. And if you are somebody at New Life, and I just want to challenge you to pray about doing this. If you're somebody at New Life who says, I'm not a tither, this is what we are doing. It's called a 4-month tithe challenge. And what you do is you say, I'm going to tithe for the next 4 months. February, March, April, May. I'm going to tithe for those 4 months. At the end of those 4 months, if you say, you know what, God hasn't blessed me, we'll give you all your money back. We'll write a check and give you all your money back. Okay? Now, here's what you need to do to have that work. One, you need to be somebody who's not tithing right now. Secondly, you need to turn in a card. And then third, you need to give your way in a way that we can track it, right? Don't get to the end and go, well, I forgot to turn in a card, but I've given $10,000 in random cash over the last 4 months. Give it back to me. Just have a way that we can track it, okay? But we believe that passage where God says, give. Now, it's up to you to do it. And we're not going to follow up and go, well, we checked with the IRS and we know how much money you're actually making, and this actually isn't 1/10. This is between you and God. But we believe what God says, and the purpose of it, now, will other people benefit if you give more? Yeah. But I want you to recognize the fact that by you tithing, you put God first and build around it, and your faith will get built. It's not a coincidence that Jesus said, you can't serve. Jesus didn't say, when he was talking about who and what was going to compete with God in our lives, he didn't say your comfort, didn't say your family, he didn't say how you look or how you feel. He said, you cannot serve God and money, because money competes with us for security. And our faith gets built when we obey God in that area. So the 4-month tithe challenge, if you're somebody who's not a tither, somebody who doesn't give 10% regularly, I want to challenge you to look at that and consider doing that. Saying, I'm going to give for the next 4 months. I'm going to give 10%. And if at the end God doesn't bless me, we're not going to make a big deal. We're not going to make you come up here on a Sunday and say how God has not blessed you to get your money back. You can communicate by email and say, I did the 4-month tithe challenge. Please return my money and we'll do it for you. Because we believe the Bible when it says, God says, test me in this and see if I won't pour out a blessing. So I'm going to become an intentional giver. I'm going to give back to God what belongs to God. All of it really belongs to God, but God says, give me back that first 10%. And then secondly, the other way I can be an intentional giver, I will give more and more and more. And here's where that comes from. 2 Corinthians 8, the chapter prior to the one we've been reading from, Paul writing again about generosity says, he's writing to these people, he says, just as you excel in everything, then he lists ways that they excel in faith, speech, knowledge, complete earnestness and love for us. See also that you excel in the grace of giving. He's saying, be good at giving. Be outstanding at giving and give more and more and more. Why did God make us rich? So that we can give more. So that we can help people more and give more. And practice makes us better at that. And I just want to encourage, for some of you, this may be an idea of like to excel in giving. You may be a long time tither. You may be like we are. I've been doing this for a long time. You're preaching to the choir. I could have stayed home and watched the NFL pregame today, okay? Which would have to be like 6 hours. But maybe what God wants you to do is give more beyond that. And I want to give you a practical way to do that. If you are interested in doing that, I want to give more and more and more. God has made me rich, and he's made me rich so I can give more. How can I give more? Here's a very practical way. Now, this is not a biblical way. And by that, I'm not saying it's against the Bible, but I'm just saying it's not spelled out in the Bible as a way to do it, but it's a good practical way to do it. Be a percentage giver. And by that, I'm saying, okay, so I'm going to tithe 10%. Maybe I'm going to make it a goal to give 2% beyond that to something else. Maybe I'm going to give 2% to Mission Solano or to missions around the world. I'm going to give 2% to the Solano Food Bank, or I'm going to give 2% or 3% to this, or I'm going to give to make it a percentage above 10%. If you're somebody who, I'm already tithe, I'm already doing that first part. I'm giving back to God what belongs to God. I want to give more and more and more. How can I do that? For us, it was a real challenge and a stretching point and a faith builder when we got on board with the Imagine campaign, because we were already giving. And when Imagine, which is the New Life Building program that started 2.5 years ago, and we got challenged to think about what is a big number that God might want to stretch your faith by having you give. And for us, it was a much bigger number than I was really, I couldn't just sit down and scratch out and figure out how to do it. But we had to, remember we talked about this earlier, we had to scheme about ways, how can we give more? How can we give in that area? And because of that, we found out ways to do it, and I feel like we've been blessed by doing that. If you give, you say, I want to give a higher, I want to give a percentage more, then you get the bonus, you get a raise, you get a tax refund, you get money you don't really know is coming back. Part of that, you say, I'm giving this away because God has made me rich, and he's made me rich so that I can give more. I will return to God what belongs to God, and I'll give more and more and more. I'm going to become, because God has, how to be rich? I'm not going to trust in my riches, but in God who richly blesses me. And then I'm going to give more and more and more. And the way that I do that is by intentionally giving. Giving back to God what's God's. Finding ways to give more and more. Scheming of ways to do it. And I just want to throw in this as a recommendation. Some of you, you may be going, man, I would like to do that. I don't know how to do that better. We have two opportunities coming up. In the next few weeks, Bob Rickey is going to be here next week, Sunday morning. He will be entertaining and informative, and he'll challenge you. Sunday night, he's going to give a seminar on finances. And it's not just on how to give. It's on how to save, and he's going to be giving more. Avail yourself of that. Be here for that. That's next Sunday night. He's doing that. And then the Dave Ramsey Financial Peace University, which has changed the financial lives of a bunch of New Life families, starts in February. And there's a little bit of an investment in that for you, but it will pay off, and it will put you in a position where you have better control over things. If we're going to serve God and not money, sometimes we need to get that money part under control. But what I really want to challenge you on today is, you're rich, don't trust in your riches, trust in God. But because we have more, let's be intentional givers who give more. And it may be saying, I'm in on that 4-month tithe challenge. It may be, I'm going to give a percentage more and more. Whatever it is, but if you're a follower of Jesus, follow what Jesus said, follow what Paul said, and be generous. So let's pray.